wishing you a very pleasant good afternoon, wherever you may be.
Omaha! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
This is what's great about sports. This is what the greatest thing about sports is. You play to win the game. Hello?
Cincinnati.
5 seconds left in the game. Do you believe in miracles? Yes!
Spanning the globe to bring you the constant variety of sport.
Good afternoon, everybody. I am your host, Peter DeFee. This is the Sports Axis, live from Lakeland, Florida. A lot of baseball to talk about today, as I promised yesterday. And I'm actually going to get into the fan grief, because I know everybody's coming off of the LSU-Clemson National Championship game. A couple of people are coming off of a devastating Ravens loss to the Titans. I know personally, I made this list after the Patriots-Titans game in the wild card weekend, and right now I would say I'm probably on stage 5 of the fan grief, maybe even stage 4. I'll explain that a little bit later on in the show, but for right now, we are having a little technical difficulties with getting the podcast up, so that should be up around 12 o'clock after I'm done here. Gonna go put that up so you guys can listen to that on Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcast, Apple Podcast, wherever you listen to podcasts. Make sure you follow us on Twitter at @_SportsAxis. Follow us on Instagram at Axis Sports. We do a lot more stuff there as well. And then, of course, the podcast name is The Sports Axis. You can find that anywhere and everywhere that you listen to podcasts. But let's get right into it. Josh Donaldson, as I alluded to yesterday, signed with the Twins. 4 years, $92 million, taking away probably one of the best free agent third basemen on the market. And sorry about my voice, guys, and the way I sound right now. It's that time of the year where allergies are starting to kick up a little bit, and I'm starting to feel a little bit right now. So I'll try my best to get through it without sneezing too much into the mic. I'm going to try to turn it off every now and then when I can, as I just did when I felt the sneeze coming. But anyways, Josh Donaldson, one of the better, probably the best third baseman on the free agent market. Oh, well, no, I can't say that because Anthony Rendon was on the free agent market. So the second best third baseman on the free agent market is gone. He signs with the Twins, who had the best home run record or home run season ever in the history of major leagues. They had, off the top of my head, let's see, 8 guys with 20-plus home runs. They just added Josh Donaldson, who hit 37 last year. Put that in perspective. You have 9 guys in a batting order. Only one of them, throughout the entire season, did not get 20-plus home runs. You had guys like Jorge Polanco, Jonathan Scope, CJ Cron, Mitch Garver, Eddie Rosario, Miguel Sano, Max Kepler, Nelson Cruz. So you had one of probably the best offenses in major leagues last year, besides the Dodgers and the Yankees. And maybe a little bit of the Astros, but they were a little shaky there in the first half. You had one of the best offenses in baseball, just add the second best third baseman that was on the market, who hit 37 home runs and drove in 94 RBIs. You think he's going to fit nicely in that lineup? With Max Kepler getting on base, Jorge Polanco getting on base, Eddie Rosario getting on base. Now, the only thing that's interesting to me is that they have Miguel Sano at first base. Do they trust him enough at first base, or do they go after somebody else? Do they trade him for pitching, which I know they're going to need to get through that AL Central and get through the playoffs this year? because having just Jose Berríos and Jake Odorizzi was not enough. As we saw, they still got swept in the ALDS, albeit to the Yankees team that was really good. But do they add another pitching piece by using Miguel Sano? We saw him get sent down to the minors last year, comes up and does hit 34 home runs and drive in 79 RBIs. But are they comfortable keeping him up at the big league level? Because now you have Josh Donaldson, who's going to be your everyday third base. There's not going to be a platoon situation there with Sano and Donaldson. You're paying Donaldson $92 million to be your everyday third baseman. So that's exactly what he's going to do. Do they keep Miguel Sano at first base? Do they trade him away to get a pitching piece? I don't know what they could get with Sano because of the inconsistency throughout his young career. Hasn't really been able to hit for average. His power is sporadic, it seems like. At times, even though he did hit 34 home runs, it seemed like he wasn't really hitting for power the whole season. Did get sent down to single A, mind you. So what do they do with Miguel Sano? I think they keep him playing him at first base. Come the trade deadline, they might try to get a piece that might be on the open market. Whether that be try to bring back CJ Cron and play him at first base. You know, he hit 25 plus home runs last year. Drove in 78. Do they try to bring him back and put him at first base and try to platoon Miguel Sano and CJ Cron? Or do they trade him away for a pitching piece? You know, whether that be a John Gray with the Rockies, depending on how the Rockies do this year. Because I know the Rockies are looking to trade Arenado, which is baffling to me because you just signed him last year to a long-term extension. And right now the Cardinals are in place to pick him up. Now, if the Cardinals can swoop into another NL West team like they did with Paul Goldschmidt, which worked out beautifully for them last year, if they can swoop in, grab Arenado, I would say they're probably one of the favorites to win the NL Central again and possibly win the World Series because you have two of the best corner infielders in the game in Paul Goldschmidt and Nolan Arenado. Marcelo Zuna is going to be back. You have a Jake Flaherty who can bolster that, who is your ace of the staff. You still have a Yadier Molina who is still very good with the bat and extremely wizard-like with the glove. So you have a lot of key pieces there to make another run at the postseason. So we'll see what that happens. But as far as his offense for the Twins goes, I think this offense is going to get even better than what we saw last year. And that was last year hitting 220-plus home runs as an entire team. Nobody in the history of baseball has hit that many home runs. They broke the record last year, and we're in a record race with the Yankees. So this is a good offense that just got better, if you can believe that, with adding Josh Donaldson. And this infield just got better with adding Josh Donaldson. This isn't a guy that's just going to play offense. He's a good defensive player. He won a Gold Glove before. Gold Glove, MVP, Silver Sluggers, you name it, he's won it. So this was a guy with Toronto that, and Oakland when he was first brought up to the major leagues, that had a very good defensive career so far. And I don't think it's going to go down anytime soon. He still showed that he could play defense at the highest level with the Atlanta Braves last year and help them make it to the postseason along with Freddie Freeman, you know, Ronald Acuna Jr., Ozzie Albies, guys like that. He was that fixture in the middle of the lineup. So it'll be fun to see where they put him in between Nelson Cruz, Miguel Sano, Mitch Garver, Eddie Rosario, Jose Polanco. How does this lineup shape up? Because you know Donaldson's going to hit either third, fourth, or fifth. If I remember correctly, I believe MLB Network slotted him in the fourth spot behind Nelson Cruz, which would make a lot of sense because Nelson Cruz will get that protection from Donaldson, and Donaldson will ultimately get protected from Nelson Cruz because you're going to have to pitch to one or the other. You're not going to put both on base because Nelson Cruz is batting third. If somebody else is on base, that's already first and second. You're not going to put Donaldson on because that's bases loaded. And why would you have bases loaded with one out? So you're going to have to pitch to one of them, and then you have Miguel Sano, Eddie Rosario, Mitch Garver, Jonathan Scope, Jorge Polanco. Like, this lineup's not going to give. But again, what are they going to do to bolster that rotation? Because Jose Berríos and Jake Odorizzi, as although that I like them, I don't think they're going to be the 1-2 punch that's going to carry you to an ALCS or a World Series or AL Central title. I think this offense and defense will, but the pitching staff needs to get better throughout the rest of this offseason to get them really moving and get them to where they want to be. And that's ultimately not playing in the ALDS, but actually winning the ALDS and going to the championship series. So real quick, before we go to our first break, Carlos Beltran was on the 2017 Houston Astros World Series team, World Series roster. He is now, or was, the New York Mets manager. He is no longer that. As of yesterday, he stepped down. This happened after the show yesterday. He stepped down as manager of the Mets, which garnered a lot of social media hot takes and whatnot, a lot of jokes. One of my favorite jokes was congratulations to Carlos Beltran on being undefeated as Mets manager. Didn't even play or manage a game for the Mets this season. He just stepped down because he was connected to the 2017 Houston Astros sign stealing scandal. So there was a lot of information to take in. A lot of it was because he was a player, they don't know how he directly impacted that whole sign stealing scandal. If he was the one to hit the garbage can, if he was one to wear the buzzer that a lot of people were speculating now when Jose Altuve hit the game winning home run, he didn't want anybody to rip his jersey off because he had a wire, and he immediately went into the tunnel, went to the clubhouse, changed his shirt, came back out, and then did his interview. So a lot of people are saying that he had a wire or a little buzzer underneath his jersey that every time it was a curveball, the buzzer would go off. It would buzz his chest, and he knew it was a curveball, and he'd be able to sit back and hit it. So because of that connection, the Mets decided to... Well, it wasn't the Mets that decided, excuse me. Carlos Beltran decided to step down. It was a little bit of a mutual agreement the same way with Alex Cora, but they were already wavering in their support of Carlos Beltran because of everything that had come out. And we talked yesterday about how the Red Sox were still not out of the clear with their investigation still going on, but Alex Cora was just, you know, a minor chess piece, if you'd say, to make sure that their punishments weren't as harsh. I still think their punishments are going to be harsh because Alex Cora was not only on the 2017 Astros coaching staff, but he was the manager of the 2018 Red Sox staff, who was also accused of cheating last year. Or excuse me, 2 years ago in 2018 when they won. So now you have Carlos Beltran, who, without managing a single game, is already out as Mets manager, and they will be looking to hire somebody else yet again without even starting the season. So there's a lot of things that are coming from this trickle-down effect of the Houston Astros 2017 scandal that I don't think we're done seeing yet. I think the players are still going to get some sort of fine, some sort of punishment. I think the Astros are pretty much done, but I think something could still come about to Jim Crane. even though he has to pay the $5 million fine, and he loses 4 draft picks in the next 2 years. I could see something else coming that way, just to show the rest of the teams that we're not taking it easy on the Astros, depending on if anything new comes out as well. And the Red Sox. The Red Sox are still going to have their punishment coming. Just because Alex Cora stepped down doesn't mean they're out of the blue. So a punishment will be coming to the Red Sox. I'm sure it'll be the exact same punishment as the Astros. They'll get the $5 million fine. They'll lose the 4 draft picks, 2 first rounders, 2 second rounders in 2020, 2021, which is going to hurt them because they could be losing Mookie Betts in the next couple of years. They could be losing Xander Bogaerts in the next couple of years if they decide to trade him away. Rafael Devers, JD Martinez, David Price. They could be in a world of hurt, and losing these first top 4 draft picks these next 2 years is really going to hurt them, because that's people in their farm system, guys in their farm system that they could develop and really raise into being the next David Price, next Mookie Betts, next Xander Bogaerts. So I believe their punishment's still coming, but it's going to have to be a wait-and-see effect and see if they do get that $5 million fine, if they do suspend their GM, if they do, you know, lose their draft picks, if the owner of the Red Sox does get another fine, if the players get any fines, you know, what is going to be the next step for Major League Baseball that they say, hey, enough is enough. We're going to make your punishment 10 times harder, because not only were you the cheater on the 2017 roster, but you also cheated in 2018 with the Red Sox. And I'm speaking about Alex Cora. So he will go down, and people are already saying this, he will go down as one of the most prolific cheaters in Major League Baseball, in sports history, too. He will be hard-pressed to find a job because he didn't do it once, he did it twice. And it will be hard-pressed for him to gain any respect going forward from his peers. So that is the trickle-down effect of this Red Sox scandal as well now. So Alex Cora out as manager, Carlos Beltran out as manager, AJ Hinch out as manager, Jeff Luhnow out as the GM. So a lot of things have trickled down from this 2017 Astros sign-stealing scandal. And I think it's going to be more of a wait-and-see as well for what's to come with the Red Sox. And the players, of course, too. But coming up next, after the break, I'm going to take you guys through the 5 stages of NFL fan grief that I think everybody goes through. I know I went through them. I know my friends go through them. But I think a lot more people go through them more than we think. And that's going to be next, right after the break. You're listening to the Sports Access. Welcome back. It's the Sports Access. I'm your host, Peter DeFee. So we all go through these stages of fan grief, whether we want to admit it or not, we go through it. And a lot of us don't realize that we're going through it until a couple of days later, or a week later, or in some cases, if it's a Super Bowl loss, a month later, a year later, whatever. But we realized we went through it at some point or the other. Personally, I made up this list because I thought about it a lot after the Patriots wild card weekend loss to the Tennessee Titans. I was conflicted. I was feeling a lot of emotions. I was like, how did this happen? You know, why did this happen? You know, what just happened? Like, how could the Patriots have not scored in the second half? So there's a lot of emotions racing through my head. And so there's 5 stages of fan grief. There might be more to you guys, but to me, there's 5. The first one is the WTH. What just happened? What the heck? How did we lose? Why didn't we do this? So, the what just happened. After the game, you know, I'm sitting back to the Patriots aren't supposed to lose in Wild Card Weekend. You know, what just happened? What the heck? You know, if you're talking about the Tennessee Titans, Baltimore Ravens game, like, whoa. How did the Ravens only score 12 points when they were scoring 33 points the whole year? Like, what just happened? Whoa. You know, like, how did we lose? Like, how did the Ravens, or how did the Patriots lose to the Tennessee Titans? How do you have a good rush defense but let Derrick Henry run 180 yards on you? So, you know, the WTH stage. You know, why didn't we do this is also part of that stage. Why didn't we try to throw the ball more on first down? Why didn't we go for it on fourth down? Why didn't we insert what you wanted your team to do, but they didn't do? That's the WTH stage. That's stage number one. Stage number two, you're mad. You've just lost. Your team just lost. Your favorite team just lost. No Super Bowl this year. No World Series this year. No Stanley Cup this year. No nothing. Out of the playoffs, didn't make the playoffs, you're mad. You know, you just can't stop seeing red in front of your face. Seems like you can't live with them losing. You're mad. You don't want to talk to anybody. You don't want to listen to what anybody has to say after the game's over. You turn off the TV. You know, you turn off the TV, you're just like, I'm not watching anymore. I'm done with this. I don't care. I'm mad. You know, you just can't explain what you're going through. If somebody tries to talk to you, you don't even want to listen to them. You're like, get out of my face. My team just lost. I'm mad. Give me a couple of seconds to... Or give me a couple minutes, a couple hours to really digest what just happened. Then you go to stage three, which is the hypothetical. And that's the, what if we did this, or what if we would have just did this earlier in the game? We would have won. You're asking yourself, you're telling yourself these questions. Well, if we would have just did this, we would have won. Well, if we would have just did this, we would have won. Well, nothing. Would have, could have, should have, didn't. You know, if only we got this guy earlier in the season in a trade, then we would have won. Because he had an amazing second half of the season. He would have been on our team. We would have won. He would have helped us win. You know, and I heard this a lot, and I went through this stage a lot, because Derrick Henry was linked to being traded. And I know the Patriots were one of the teams that was high up on the list. So I went through this a lot. I was like, oh, man. What if the Patriots could have gotten Derrick Henry? Then they would have had Derrick Henry on their team instead of the Titans, and they would have had to use Deion Lewis, who is not as good of a back as Derrick Henry. So I went through this stage a lot. You know, what if, you know, we would have went for it on fourth and one and made it? Then they wouldn't have been able to get the ball back. They wouldn't have scored that field goal or that touchdown, and we would have won. So it's the should have, would have, could have, didn't hypothetical stage. And that's stage number three. And I feel like a lot of people stay in that stage a lot longer than necessary. A lot of guys stay in that stage throughout the whole off season, if you will, going into the next season, going into, you know, training camp, going into whatever. You're always like, oh man, if we could have just gotten this guy, if we could have just gotten this guy in the offseason as a free agent, if we could have traded for this guy, if this guy wouldn't have gotten hurt, if this guy wouldn't have been playing bad the whole year, you know, if this guy, you know, this or that, insert whatever. It's the hypothetical stage that a lot of fans stay in, and a lot of fans live in that stage a lot longer than they need to, a lot longer than that's necessary. And they're just, they can't seem to get out of that stage sometimes. Stage number four is the whatever stage. You know, you try to seem like you don't care that they lost. You try to create this fake facade to your friends so it doesn't look like this loss affected you. Kind of just sit back in your chair and you're like, oh, man. Like, I don't care. Whatever. I knew they weren't going to win. You try to make it seem like you knew all along that they weren't going to win. I know I did this when in the Patriots game. I was like, you know what? I deep down I kind of knew that the Patriots were going to lose, but I still wanted them to win. I know I did this at least 3 or 4 times during the actual game. Even though I picked them in one of my predictions to win, I was like, you know what? Deep down inside, I was like, do I really think they're going to win? No, but do I want them to win because they're my favorite team? Yeah. You know, with the Ravens, it could have been like, you know what? Whatever. Lamar Jackson still had the best season as a QB in the last 7 years. Or the third best season as a QB in the last 7 years. Whatever. I don't care. We're going to be back next year. We're going to be better than ever. Which leads me into my fifth stage. Always next year. That's the fans that go, you know what? Oh, I can't wait till next year. We're going to be that much better. Lamar Jackson's going to be that much more mature. He's going to be that much better at the quarterback position. We're going to have another year of Marcus Peters in the back, as a defensive back. We're going to have Mark Ingram again. Mark Andrews is going to be healthy. There's always that next year guy that you tell yourself that they're going to get better next year, and then they're going to go all the way. Oh, next year we're going to go all the way. Mark my words, I'm going to get a tattoo for it. Right now, Super Bowl 55 champs. I had to think about the Super Bowls because I forgot we're in Super Bowl 54. No, Super Bowl 55 champs, 2020 Stanley Cup Finals champs, 2020 World Series champs. You're always that next year guy. There's always next year for you. And that's the fifth stage. So everybody goes through these stages, whether they go through them fast. I know me personally, I skipped over mad really quickly. I don't know why, but I just went from 1 to 2 to 3 really quick. And then I went to 4. And I'm not really in 5 yet because the season's still going on. And I'm waiting to see whether the Patriots get Tom Brady back, whether he retires. What happens in this year's draft? They have the 23rd pick, which I'll share with you a little bit of a mock draft preview before I put it up on Instagram for everybody else to see. But I'm still in that whatever stage, and I'm sure a lot of Ravens fans are still in that stage 2 where they're mad, or that stage 3 with the hypothetical of, oh, what if Mark Andrews would have caught this pass and would have stayed healthy? What if Marquise Brown would have caught this pass? What if Mark Ingram was able to get this first down when they didn't call it a first down? You know, I think they're still in that stage, but I think a lot of them have gone to that number 5 stage where they're like, oh, it's next year. Lamar Jackson's going to be better. Mark Ingram's going to stay healthy. Mark Andrews is going to stay healthy. Marcus Peters is going to lead that defensive core of players. Marquise Brown is going to be another year older, more mature. There's always that next year. So those are the 5 stages of fan grief that I wanted to show with you. I don't know what made me think about it, but just watching the Patriots game, second half comes around and I'm like, what the heck? And then as the fourth quarter is there, I'm mad. They didn't score a single point. They're down 14-13. And then in the third quarter, I'm a hypothetical. The best example of that was goal to go. On the 1 yard line with Sony Michel, you try to run it 3 times, nothing. And now you have to settle for a field goal. It's 13-7 going into half. And now I'm thinking in the fourth quarter, I'm like, what if Sony Michel just could have gotten into the end zone? It's 17-14. They're up by 3. And now the Tennessee Titans have to try to drive and get the ball down the field with 2 minutes left. And I like the Patriots defense over the Tennessee offense. So I know I was really in that hypothetical stage during the game. And then I was like that, whatever, I was in that whatever stage. You know, I don't really care about this, whatever. You know, I knew they were going to lose. You know, this team was terrible the last 8 weeks of the season. And I'm still kind of in that stage. I'm not in the always next year stage right now because I don't know what next year is going to bring. And I'm sure, you know, a lot of Vikings fans don't know what next year is going to bring. You know, what's going to happen to Stephon Diggs? What's going to happen to Adam Thielen? What's going to happen with Kirk Cousins? I'm sure the Seattle Seahawks fans are in that next stage. Or in that always next year stage because they had a good run and a lot of people didn't think this was going to be a 12-win team, and it turned out to be a 12-win team. So I know they're always in that next year stage. You know, Green Bay's not in a stage yet. San Francisco was in that stage last year. But now with Jimmy Garoppolo back, they're in that, oh yeah, let's win stage. So there's always stages to what's going on. I know the Nationals fans during that 2012, 14, 15, 16 run, they were like, oh, there's always next year. Bryce Harper's going to be here. Anthony Rendon's going to be here. Steven Strasburg's going to be better and healthy. Max Scherzer's going to lead this team. You know, they were always in that always next year stage until they finally got to the I can finally breathe stage. We won the whole thing stage. So there's always stages to some sort of grief, some sort of pain that NFL fans are going through. And I know a lot of people like to say, oh, it's just a game. It doesn't matter. But sports fans know that it's not just a game. They know that that this team means a lot to them, whether they grew up watching them, whether they have a fond memory of it. You know, it's more than a game. So these are the stages that we go through as NFL fans, as MLB fans, as NHL, NBA fans. You know, there's always these set stages that we go through. And this is just the five stages of grief. I know there's the seven stages of grief, but these are the five stages of fan grief. So that's my list. Kind of came up with a short minute. But coming up next, with the NFC and AFC championship games right around the corner and the national championship game just ending, I kind of figured it was a good time to make a mock draft of what I think teams could use, and we'll kind of go over as well the NFC and AFC championship games. But that is coming up right around the corner. This is the Sports Access. Welcome back. It's the Sports Access. I'm Peter DeFee, your host with the most. Let's get right into these NFC-AFC championship games that we have this weekend. It'll decide who goes to the Super Bowl. Will it be the Tennessee Titans or the Kansas City Chiefs on the AFC side, or will it be the Packers and 49ers on the NFC side? So getting right into it, Texans and Chiefs. AFC game, 3 o'clock on Sunday. I'm sure a lot of people will be glued to their seats for this game, especially what the Tennessee Titans did to the New England Patriots and the Baltimore Ravens. And I'm sure a lot of people are going to want to see what Patrick Mahomes is going to do in this game. We know he had a great game last week against the Houston Texans, especially being down 24-0 at one point. He ended up coming back to win 51-31. First team in NFL history to be down by 20 and then win by 20. So these are teams that met twice this year. Titans won 35-32 at home, and then the Chiefs returned the favor earlier in the season by beating the Titans at home. But the Titans did beat the Chiefs 35-32. Earlier this season, that was at home. Now you're going to Arrowhead, which is a lot tougher of a place to play in. So will the Titans be able to use Derrick Henry like they did in the last couple of games and get him over 150 yards? Because if they do, I think they're going to be able to handle this clock just as they did with the Patriots and the Ravens. Kansas City's not going to have a whole lot of time, might have to waste a couple of timeouts, especially late in the second, in the first half and late in the second half or early in the second half, depending on what the game is. But really, the Titans' main goal is to do the same thing they did to the Ravens. Get ahead, use Derrick Henry in the run game, waste this play clock as much as you can, and make Patrick Mahomes have to throw the ball on every single down. Even though Patrick Mahomes is a great quarterback and can do that, if you have to throw the ball on every single play because you're down, you know, you have to, you know as a defense, okay, this has to be a throw. This has to be a throw. Granted, the same thing happened with the Texans in the divisional round against the Chiefs. They were up 24-0. Patrick Mahomes had to throw the ball pretty much on every single play, and the Texans could do nothing to stop it. I think that's where the Texans and the Titans differ a little bit, because the Titans, when the Ravens had to do that, were able to stop them. And this was a Ravens team that scored 33 points a game and had the MVP in the quarterback of Lamar Jackson. So I believe they can do a lot better job than what the Texans did against the Chiefs. Now, granted, who knows? The Chiefs were able to score 32 points against the Titans the previous time they played each other, but the Titans were able to score 35. This is a Chiefs team whose defense did get better, and especially against the Texans in the second half, or really after the first quarter, was a lockdown defense. You know, a couple of misplays here and there had the Texans in favorable field position to score points, so it wasn't all on the Chiefs' defense. It was more on the Chiefs' offense. That's what the Titans want to do. They want to get Patrick Mahomes in first, second, and third down throwing situations, just like they did with Lamar Jackson, and make Patrick Mahomes utilize his legs and scramble around, keep him uncomfortable in the pocket, do whatever they did. If they can just take the game plan that they used for the Ravens and put it over to the Chiefs and bring everything they did, you know, rushing three guys, four guys, and making Patrick Mahomes uncomfortable. If they can do that, then they will be successful just as they were. If Derrick Henry can get over 100 yards, I don't think he needs to go over 150 or 180 again, but that would be nice for the Titans. If he can get over 100 yards, and if Tannehill can use that for play action purposes, for getting 5-6 yard slants for first downs after Derrick Henry gets 5 or 6 yards, if they can do that, I think that's a recipe for success, and they could be looking at playing in their first Super Bowl in about 20 years. On the other side, for the Chiefs, they have to find a way to contain Derrick Henry. It's simple, but it's not. But it's what they need to do. They need to be able to contain Derrick Henry, make him not get over 120, 130 yards with ease like he has the couple of weeks prior. And they just need to be better with handling the football. They can't muff punts. They can't fumble the ball. They need to be cautious, not costly, with their turnovers. I'm not going to say they're not going to turn the ball over, but they just need to be a little more cautious than they were costly. Now to the NFC game. Packers and 49ers. Packers need to find a way to utilize Aaron Jones and make him get past this first level of defense with Joey Bosa, D. Ford, second level of the linebackers. They need to be able to create holes with that offensive line to where Aaron Jones can have some say in this running game. They also need to find some way to contain Joey Bosa to where he is not making plays with quarterback pressure as much, quarterback sacks, or just in general making stops on first or second down with the run game. And they need to be able to find a way to not only have to rely on Davante Adams. Can they use a Geronimo Allison, which, humble brag, I went to high school with him in Spoto High School in Riverview, Florida. Just a little humble brag. But can they find a way to utilize their other receivers? Scantling, Allison. Can they utilize Aaron Jones out of the backfield for, you know, quick 5-6 yard screen passes. No, try to keep Aaron Rodgers on his feet as much as possible. Do not let him get sacked by this really incredibly talented front that the 49ers have. 49ers, on the other case, utilize the run the way you've been utilizing it the whole year. And if you're not, let Jimmy Garoppolo make plays like he has been for the last couple of weeks. Find a way to get past this good but sometimes shaky Green Bay Packers secondary. Can Mostert make plays out of the backfield for you, catching the ball? Can Emmanuel Sanders be that playmaker that he once was with the Denver Broncos? Can Jimmy Garoppolo continue to be that guy he has been for the last couple of weeks? Can Tevin Coleman help you out in this run game against a pretty good, solid run defense from the Green Bay Packers? You know, Deebo Samuel, can he make plays in the field as well? Can he help out Emmanuel Sanders? They're also going to need to just keep playing the same defense that they have been. That secondary has been amazing, led by Richard Sherman. I mean, it's been amazing. They're one of the best, if not the best, secondaries in all of football, probably behind the Patriots, who had Stephon Gilmore, Patrick Chung, and the McCourtney twins in that backfield. Guys like Mosley, though, Ward, you know, Solomon Thomas up front that I didn't even mention as a defensive end. You know, you have Moore as a safety. You know, Richard Sherman, like I said. You know, can Matt Breida make plays for you in the backfield? It is going to come down to, can you stop Aaron Jones from making plays? And can guys that have been making plays for you all year, Emmanuel Sanders, Tevin Coleman, Mostert, can they continue to step up and make the plays that they have been for the last 8 weeks when you were able to take over this number one seed? Other than that, I expect these two games to be really good, especially that Titans-Chiefs game. I think will be the best game of the weekend because we're going to really see what the Titans are made of. Can Derrick Henry do it for a third straight week? Can the Titans pull up the best comeback, or excuse me, the best upset of the year and in the Chiefs? The Packers 49ers game, I'm expecting to be gritty, hard fought. The run game, whoever can win in the run game battle is going to most likely win the game. But right now, the Titans-Chiefs game, I'll put a prediction out. I think the Chiefs win it, but I think it's going to be one of the better games of the weekend. But I think the Chiefs win it 28-21. A little bit low scoring. They win by a touchdown, but I have the Chiefs winning 28-21. 49ers and Packers, on the other hand, it's going to be in California. It's not going to be freezing like it was in Green Bay, although they were able to score, you know, almost 65 points against them, Green Bay and Seattle. Final score being 28-24. So, can the Packers utilize that run game with Aaron Jones? Can they be successful getting a pass Thompson, or excuse me, getting past Thomas, getting back past Bosa, getting back past D Ford? You know, can they go over the top with a Geronimo Allison when they need to? Can Davante Adams be that guy that catches 17 passes again like he did last week? In this game, I think 49ers being at home, playing comfortably, I think they win the run game battle, and I think they win that game. I think it's a little bit more high scoring than people think. I'm going to go 34-27. I think they win by a touchdown. I think it's a very close game, but I ultimately think it's going to be a high-scoring game, that one that the 49ers win. And I think it's going to be 49ers Chiefs in the Super Bowl, which will be a very entertaining Super Bowl. You're going to have a team that wants to go fast-paced over the top in the Chiefs, and a team that kind of wants to slow it down a little bit and milk the clock in the 49ers with that run game. So those are my predictions. I think we're in for a very good treat this season, or excuse me, this weekend. And I think this Super Bowl is going to be very interesting as well. Whether the Titans make it, because we didn't think the Titans were going to make the Super Bowl, that'll be very interesting. Or whether it's a 49ers-Chiefs Super Bowl, or whether it's the old gun in Aaron Rodgers versus the young gun in Patrick Mahomes. But that's all the time I have for today. I got to get to class. Unfortunately, remember to follow us on Instagram at Axis Sports. We post a lot more content up there, as well as mock drafts, power rankings, just general news about sports. Follow us on Twitter at @the_sportsaxis. That's where I post a lot of the podcasts for people to find that don't have Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google, whatever. But remember, we are on Spotify. We are on Apple Podcasts. We are on Google. We are on Stitcher. We're on wherever you find podcasts. You name it, we're on it. But that's it for my show today. Thank you for joining us, or for joining me, I should say. I've been your host with the most, Peter Fee. You've been listening to the Sports Access, keeping you on all the news and all the spin that you want to be in. I'll see you guys next week.
This is what the greatest thing about sports is. You play to win the game. Hello?
Cincinnati.
5 seconds left in the game. Do you believe in miracles? Yes!
Spanning the globe to bring you the constant variety of sports.